Just a little while ago, I was handed the keys to a great new set of tools for manipulating search results at the Internet Archive. This sounds almost pedestrian in terms of power, but I can assure you it enabled me to go back and look at collections I've been building over the last 10 years or so and regard them with new eyes and with new capabilities. These new powers will give me the ability to create hierarchies and sorted subcollections that I think people will find extraordinarily pleasurable to move around in. But instead of talking about that particular feature, which will take me months to put together, I want to talk once again about the simple pleasure of sorting and what it means to me to face down a mountain of material and turn it into a ski resort of information. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. If you're engaging a new approach to sorting information, it helps to work with a relatively small amount of material and then work up to the huge piles. For this particular task, I started with the Pulp Magazine Archive, a relatively small collection of about 13,000 newspapers, pamphlets, and comic books representing the idea of pulp. Cheaply made books, mostly from the first half of the 20th century, printed on exceedingly cheap paper and representing an almost culinary mix of writing, art, and eye-grabbing titles and headlines. It's really an experience to go through the pulp archive. First, you find all of these beautiful, lurid covers promising you adventure tales, tales of mystery, of murder, of romance. And then you step inside, finding 1920s and 1930s versions of health ads, scams, and job applications, until finally seeing the stories of detectives, war heroes, sports figures, and romantic liaison in places exotic and mundane. They lived once on newspaper stands, in cities and in little towns, beckoning young and old to spend a nickel, a quarter, a dollar, to get dozens of pages of passages to other times, other places, other adventures. Like a lot of collections on the archive, pulp magazines were being thrown into just one large collection, with about 10,000 individual issues piled on one another and mostly sorted by who would view which covers the most, which naturally meant the most scandalous, the most risque, would rise immediately to the top. But if, for example, you were in a mood to read westerns, or war stories, or see what passed for kids and young teen literature back in the 1920s, it was going to be an effort. With this new tool in place, I was able to use scripts I had written long ago and start sorting all of these magazines into subcollections. Sometimes an energetic contributor will put up dozens or hundreds or even thousands of extremely well put together items with easy to read metadata, extraordinarily high quality scans, and even titles that enable me to sort them easily. Others feel that they put up one or two issues and then move on to other things. Think of the years that were spent building up the Pulp Magazine Archive as having a room on site that had boxes and boxes of all these different issues, and they were being put roughly on shelves. Shelves with occasionally the name of a specific issue or a specific genre, but not much else. If you walked in, you didn't know where to start. You didn't know, unless you were coming in already knowing exactly what you were looking for. Well, the chances of browsing your way to success were minimal at best. There's nothing wrong with browsing. There's absolutely nothing bad with discovering a document that 5 seconds before you didn't know you wanted to read this much. It's a beautiful experience. but there's an argument that it shouldn't be the default experience. The time people give to browsing online is precious. They'll have a general idea of what they're looking for, and where possible, the site should help guide them in the direction that they really want to go. Within 3 days, I sorted all 13,000 issues of pulp magazines. Here's how that works. First, some of it is already pre-sorted, little tasks I took on weekends and nights over the years. They were pretty good collections, but they were floating in a sea of randomized documents, different titles and different quality, cases where I just looked for a word like pulp or science fiction and clumped everything together. So instead, I created a new collection, an incoming box named Contributions or Inbox, and moved everything that didn't have a collection into that collection. Like water receding in a low tide, all of the other collections rose to the top, enabling me to see how much work had actually been done, which, truth be told, was not much. I then created miscellaneous science fiction, youth, romance, adventure, and started moving items into those boxes at the top level. From there, I could use other tools to find large groupings of material, cases where somebody had uploaded 50 or 250 issues of the same issue of the same magazine title, and I was able to give them a collection of their own. Across those days and across those 15 threads, I was able to start loading all of these magazines into their destination, sending thousands of issues into their most coherent display cases. This experience, fundamentally, is what I love the most about working with units of information. Finding headers and groupings and subject matter, and building up classification systems from nothing. The classifications of files on textfiles.com are from my teenage years, and then reworked in my 20s, and then treated solemnly by me in my 50s. The classifications in these sub-collections are being created on the spot, melded together from experience, a lifetime of walking shelves and libraries and little tiny thrift stores looking at how they put things together for their customers, for their patrons. The nice thing about working digitally is how painless it all is. My scripts work their magic, having been given my instructions, and off they go, taking hours or days to complete, but requiring none of my energy while they do so. They are, after all, bundles of information created a lifetime ago, in many cases more than a century, and are therefore considered to be their own little spaces, fully encapsulated, merely awaiting direction on where to go next. Finally, pulp magazines were at what I would call a 1.0 version. While not exactly perfect, you could walk into it at the top level and start to see immediately what your options were. This relatively small collection, which could fill a house if it were made of paper, is ready for people to walk in online and reacquaint themselves with this compelling and beautiful genre of creation. The experiment was successful. From that vantage point, I could then turn to collections that dwarfed pulp magazines by magnitudes, newsletters, pamphlets, zines, even manuals, and perhaps CD-ROMs. Somewhere north of 1 million items, not just waiting to be seen, but to be findable, searchable, connected, and allowing patrons to log in, to feel like things were arranged for them, like they're welcome instead of intruding, like they're part of the story instead of an outsider. Certainly we've had text search, and we've had the ability to use metadata to find different items on the archive. But for an entire class of materials, materials that come from just folks doing their best to add immortality to culture that does not always have an advocate fighting for it, this new generation of folk scanime will flip from an inspiring project to an inspiring result. And, as I've come to realize across my life, it is my greatest honor to stand next to that result and welcome all who may attend. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Sean Kelly, Manxalot, John Sturm, Dileep Reddy, Trixie the Cat, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. In many ways, the situation at the archive when it came to user uploads is itself a kind of debt. It's a promise, an IOU, as people would upload literal terabytes of information, that we would figure out ways to collate and present that information. Certainly, doing optical character recognition on all of these texts helped a lot. If you switch to full text search, you can look for phrases, but you need to know what those phrases are. Getting past your own name, people you knew, or a particular part of your childhood, being able to feel like there's a cohesive web of interlocked information, to me, is critical to enjoying it. The moment that takes you from seeing somebody on a cover or reading an article or a story that inspires you, and then using that as a launching pad for yet another journey, is critical to the online experience. The Internet Archive, as it stands, is an astounding achievement. Thousands and thousands of terabytes of information, collated from all over the Internet and provided by volunteers and partners, the result is beautiful. But fundamentally, I think once you stop thinking about who you're doing this for the audience, for the future, for the generations that will come, you've stopped being the caretaker that it deserves. It'll be my pleasure to continue to do so.